The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 106 for Wednesday, April 9th, 2014. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I gather to talk about the geeky stuff we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me this evening are two good friends of mine, Mr. Mike O'Day and Peyton Francis. Peyton, welcome back to the show, man.
Hey, how is everybody doing tonight? It's
great. It's been a little while.
Yeah, I've been busy. Just
you know, doing the small thing. Yeah, we'll get to some more details on that in just a second. Mike, how's it going?
Great. How are you doing?
I am doing. I'm doing better now. Podcasting always cures all ails for me. Earlier today, as I was telling Peyton in a pre-show, today has been the beach ball of death, the spinning wheel of the internet, the Apple TV loading error, like everything that involved being plugged in today was just taking 90 seconds longer than it should. And I was not trying to do anything fancy. Everything
have
was
you
just
turned it off and turned it back on.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Look, I have now, you know, because it's the last thing I did before the show. I was like, you know what? I'm ready to go. I have all of my internet tabs open and I'm restarting my computer just because. So things seem to be a little bit smoother right now. Although the old MacBook Pro takes a little bit longer to reboot than I thought. So, I mean, you know, 5 to 9, I'm sitting here kind of going, hurry up. I need to be on a show. I just kind of threw my hands up in the air today at around noon and said, all right, screw it. I'm going to go get groceries. My iPhone is working. I'm going to listen to a podcast. I'm going to go for a walk.
There you go. Sometimes you need those days.
And I needed to go yesterday, but of course it was pouring down rain here, so I didn't get outside, which is kind of a pain in the ass. Peyton, we had you on a little while ago. It wasn't too long ago. I think it was before the premiere though.
Yeah, I think it was probably before Montreal, I think. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
SAMX and all that.
Yeah, so before 54 Hours became an official short film shared with the world. And I made an announcement on the Citadel Cafe a week or so ago when it launched. But like, how did the premiere go in Newfoundland? Like, how were things going?
It went very well. Last week we had the world premiere of the 54 Hours National Film Board short about the 1914 sealing disaster for Newfoundland. There'll be links at the end of the show anyway. But yeah, we did it at the Provincial Archives, the rooms, big screening room, and it seated 140 people per sitting, and we had 4 screenings. And the first 2 were packed.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. Wow. And like there were so many people there with like floor-length sealskin jackets and stuff like that. Like, it was awesome. Because it would be really interesting if like a PETA person showed up, because they would get beaten at the door. It would have been great, right? But anyway, not that I'm against, you know. It's all about what your ethics are, but whatever.
But it was
a good time. One lady show up. She was probably, I'd say, close to 90, and she showed up for the first screening, and it was packed. And she came up to one of the producers and said, like, my dad was one of the guys who walked off the boat. Can I get a seat? And we're like, we'll find you a seat. Come on in.
Yeah, really.
So like, even though it was 100 years ago, like, there's still people around who are really close to the event. So yeah, it was a really good showing. A couple good question and answers. We had a lot of great press about it. There's a bunch of stuff online. So yeah, it was a good time.
Well, and congratulations for I think the first time in person that I've talked to you since the premiere. I know I sent you an email, but like, I don't think I've actually had a chance to say it. So one of the things that I did notice, you did an interview with CBC, and one of the questions that they asked you was about the modern perception of the sealing industry. And I thought it was really interesting how you were talking about how the film, despite being a harrowing tale of loss and hardship, you know, earlier in the previous century, it also kind of helps shape people's views of the sealing industry. So how are you guys trying to change that or nurture that view?
Well, I think we're just trying to move away from the idea of it being a blood sport sort of, you know, of men going onto the ice for the joy of killing these quote unquote, you know, defenseless white coats. Like we have archival footage in the films and stuff, and there's not a single white coat to be found. That was something that brought about by the fashion industry, you know, mid-century, and it stopped in the 80s. But in any event, it makes for good press, you know, look at Ellen, you know, she's got this huge, all that money from that selfie she did at the Oscars went towards a lobby group that is against the cruelty of the animals, which is fine, and also against the seal hunt, right? So she's calling, you know, she's on her show calling Newfoundlanders barbarians, right? Mm. So like that perception itself, it needs to be changed, because the same reason why the men went through the ice then, it's the same reason why people are leaving their families to go to Alberta to work in the oil fields and to go to sea and everything else. It's just to provide a better life for the family because they have no other options. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, so. And these are all dangerous positions. I mean, like you have to go through extensive training and like all this stuff is hard, hard knocks compared to what, I would think most of people reading the internet and jumping on the soapbox are used
yeah.
to.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's definitely a divide.
Yeah. 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 Cause you know, the wonderful images of, you know, Bridget Bardot or, you know, what's her name? Paul McCartney's ex. You know, out on the ice taking pictures next to a white coat. They probably had to shoot the 200-pound mother to get close to it, right? Plus, yeah. You know, if you hit a white coat, if you get too close to a white coat, you know, when they start to be a little more self-sufficient, you know, after the first couple of days, they'll bite you, right? So
yeah.
Anyway, it's, you know, it's all about optics, and you know, it just makes for a nice poster. So
yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm just hoping that this film itself will help spark a dialogue about the type of work these people are doing, why they're doing it. Because the same issues are holding true today, you know, corporate interests are taking over, and the little guy is the one who's, you know, put in harm's way. And we're in a position where they pay enough to keep you there, but not enough to keep you happy or give you, you know, a proper living wage, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't, you know, you spend enough time there, you can't go anywhere else because you have no other skills, and it's just, you know, whatever trade you're in. So anyway, yeah. that's a big tirade. So
yeah. But, well, know. I mean, it's obviously something that can be communicated by checking out the film if you've got a chance to. Is it going to be coming to not theaters near you, but like, do you have any dates at this point as far as when it's going to be shown around?
I'm not quite sure about actual festivals and things of that nature, because they've actually released it online for free on nfb.ca.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if you go to the National Film Board of Canada website and you search 54 hours, it was on the feature page there all last week, right on the homepage.
Nice.
And so if you got the app, you can watch it on that. You can watch it on the website or whatever. And at the bottom, if you scroll down the page, you'll see a couple behind the scenes of the film, making of stuff. And then there's a bunch of people's reactions to the films. And like some people were, you know, showing it to the grade 5 classes and stuff like that. Like wow. Some really, you know, really interesting responses. Most of it very positive. So we're very happy with how
good
it's
stuff,
received,
man. Well,
so,
congratulations yeah. again. That's great. Yeah. And that's 54 hours, not, yeah. You don't have to spell it yeah. out. It's the number 54
just five,
hours.
Yeah, 54. And you know, just go to my website, cardboardtreehouse.com.
Right.
I've got, you know, tons of links and stuff to different interviews and mm-hmm. the source material and all that. So anyway,
that's cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. It's thanks. So such a cool thing to happen to, you know, someone that's put a lot of work, you know, into this project. I mean, obviously along with your co-directors and writers
yeah.
and all that kind
yeah,
of stuff,
yeah,
but,
Bruce Alcock,
but they're not here. You are, you know, yeah. And, I was going to say there was one more thing I was going to add and I can't remember. It just escaped me. Oh, like I didn't mean to sound so surprised, but I'm glad to hear that they put it online for free, because I was kind of like thinking like, oh God, like if this kind of goes the way of some of these older media companies, that it's going to be in film festivals and basically unseeable for the first, yeah. you know, until the hype dies down the inertia, you know, kind of yeah. dies down. That's awesome that like anybody, yeah. including all of our, you know, American and international listeners can, yeah. can go and watch it on
yeah,
the National
yeah,
Film Board.ca. That's awesome.
Yeah, we had the premiere on the Sunday, and then on Monday, they had it online.
Awesome. I love it when companies get it.
Yeah.
You know, I really do. Well, Mike, what's new with you? It's been a couple of weeks since I've had you on the show.
Not a whole lot. A lot of working. I've been playing Hearthstone whenever I have the chance, which recently came out on the iPad in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
which is awesome. So, it, you know, productivity goes down a lot when that happens.
So what game was that again, sorry?
Hearthstone. It's a computer card game from Blizzard.
Okay.
Jocelyn and I have been playing for quite some time. My iPad tends to mysteriously disappear from time to time. it's nice actually. I'm looking at getting my mother into it because she likes iPad games. She enjoys her iPad quite a bit, and it's a video game that it's turn-based, so you don't have to be like, you know, finger on the trigger. Yeah, there's not a lot of coordination, and it's not that mom doesn't have that kind of stuff. I mean, like, God, Barry and Jocelyn, my stepdad, I mean, at Christmas 2 years ago, we had them over for dinner, and Barry and Jocelyn were on the couch playing like Super Mario Brothers for hours. They've played games before, but mom enjoys puzzle games. She enjoys kind of stuff that she can exercise her mind and kind of have that kind of a turn-by-turn sort of feel to. So we're looking at getting them into Hearthstone because I think they both enjoy it.
That's definitely a puzzle game per se, like of sorts.
Yeah. Oh, and they play cards like it's going out of style. Like they get together with friends and it's not like they play Go Fish or, you know, or anything like that. They play some really unique kind of inventive card games. And every time I talk to them, they've got a new card game that they're playing and it's hilarious and they need two decks to do it and all this kind of stuff. It's like, oh, you're going to love it when we get you into Hearthstone. There's no cards to worry about. You can just, it's all digital. It's all on the iPad. It's going to be great. Cool, that's, but you actually had a little bit of an excursion since the last time you were on the show too.
Yeah, I went down south for a week, which was very fun.
And it was the Dominican?
Yep.
Nice. How was that? So, I mean, like, was it like a big resort sort of event, or did you guys
go
off
the
beaten
path? Yeah, one of those all-inclusive resort guys, right. Which was my first experience with that, but it was just really fun. Got to, you know, do a bunch of like dune buggying and silly things, and just got to spend the blizzard that we had in the sun, which was
nice.
Awesome.
Did you get cornrows?
No.
Oh, okay.
Jeez. No.
Sometimes it's nice to have those vacations where you just kind of switch your brain off.
Yeah.
Yes, and that was definitely one of those.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking forward to Nerdtacular coming up here in July for Joss and I. We've got everything settled except for the flights. We're still kind of trying to sort that out. And it's going to be fun, but it's also going to be exhausting because it's one half vacation, one half trying to see all of the friends that you don't get to see but once a year in the same 3 days. And then the other half, and I guess for Jocelyn now too, that now that she's on A Move TV and she's on Angry Chicken, it's a lot of networking. So, I mean, like, we're going to be meeting other podcasters and fans. And I mean, a lot of these listeners can turn into clients for, you know, myself or you know, Scott Johnson and some of the other podcasters. Like, because of the other things that we do, people find you through the podcast, but then they ultimately end up hiring you for something else down the line. So it's part vacation and part kind of hobnobby stuff, but it's all fun, which is good. But yeah, we eventually will find a budget for the turn brain off, sit on lawn chair with glass of rum and read, you know, something, because I never get to do it. I never get to read. It's always just podcasts and audio stuff. I've got a reading list on my Safari app that's just, it's just ever growing and never changing.
You guys turn that into like a longer than just the weekend trip though, don't you?
Oh, we do. Yeah. No, I mean, we will be going from Wednesday. We'll be arriving Wednesday evening and then we'll be leaving on, I believe it's Monday morning, because Jocelyn has taken the Tuesday off. I think
that'll be the catch back up on the hours. Day.
Yeah. And the idea being that if we happen to have a flight delay or something really crazy happens where we're late coming in on Monday, that she doesn't have to go to work the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, but again, like, it's just, you know, those first 2 days, it's mostly travel, you know, it's between 8 and 12 hours, depending on what kind of flight combinations we get. And yeah, it can be long. I mean, we're hoping to, one, have the extra money, and two, find the right combination of flights to only do two hops, like from here to Detroit, and then from Detroit to Utah would be perfect.
Is that the best way to go?
Well, previously it's always been from here to Toronto to Chicago and then on to Utah. Last year was a real backwards way. We went from here to New Jersey and then from New Jersey to Houston and then from Houston to Utah. And the Houston was out of the way. Houston is far south compared to what we wanted.
It's the opposite end, right?
Yeah, like it's not really as the crow flies sort of thing. But Chicago, Detroit, kind of Midwest is kind of where you want to aim. And then from there, hopefully you can move on to Utah. Okay. The problem is that because there's not a lot of flights going in and out of Salt Lake City, you end up being on a fairly long flight, like 3 hours, give or take, on a small plane. I no longer have to worry too much about that because I don't know if I've talked about this on the show or not, but I have a prescription for flying now, and it is like night and day.
Just knock yourself out.
No, I don't even knock myself out. It's anti-anxiety medication. And at first I thought it was kind of strange to talk about it, but like it's made a world of difference in my flying experience. I feel like 2 years ago I was consulting for the CHRC here in Canada, and I had to fly back and forth to Montreal, Ottawa a lot in kind of January through March, which is nasty cold weather flying, bumpy, like turbulence, like my head hit the roof one time. It was that bumpy. I mean, and I was buckled in. And I've never had an issue flying. I've always thought it was kind of cool. It's a little bit like a roller coaster, but it, you know, not scary in the bad way. But I could not settle down for the longest time after those flights. I used to hate it. Like, I mean, I used to feel like I was going to cry beforehand. I used to get sweaty palms. Like, and all this was when I was sitting here at the house before I even left for the airport. So to be on a plane for, you know, I mean, Montreal's not too bad. It's like, you know, an hour and a half. So you're up, you're down. It's not really a long flight. But flying to Utah last year, to be on edge for 13 hours was just disgusting. Like it took me a full day just to even feel like myself again.
Just to come back.
So when Jocelyn and I knew we were going to go home to her folks' place in Toronto for Christmas this year, I had an appointment with the doctor anyway, just for regular checkup stuff. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to talk to him about this and see what I could do about it. So he said, you know, you're a pretty big guy. Like, here's a prescription. Take one and see how you feel. If you need to, take two, but like, don't do it before you get to the airport, because like, they might make you drowsy. Don't drive. Like, it's just meant to take an hour before you get on the plane. They last 4 to 6 hours, so depending on how long your flight is, you might have to take more than one, because he's just kind of covering all his bases, right? The prescription was $10. And I mean, because I was expecting, you know, like, my luck, I'm gonna get my just ass handed to me with this like $200 prescription just for flying, right? As if the cost of flying isn't enough. But no, it was $10, and it's a really strange kind of situation. The only way I can really explain how it feels is, you know, when you're on the plane and you know that it's safe. You've been up and down 100 times on other planes. You know that it's just normal. Bumps and little turbulent stuff happens. Like it's, you know, even on a normal smooth landing, I understand that it's just fine, but my body is not listening to that inner voice.
Yeah.
But with this prescription, I listen and I calm down, and I, you know, my muscles don't tense up. I'm not worried about it. Like, I'm just playing Plants vs. Zombies on my iPad and waiting for the plane to land. Like, I think I fell asleep on the first flight to Toronto, but we also had a really late flight. So, I mean, that combined with the medication might have had an effect. But coming home, it was just, you know, middle of the day, it was fine, you know, no big deal. And I mean, it's changed the way that I look at travel, because I really started to kind of dread, you know, vacationing and travel. And it's like, hey, I want to go on vacation. Can we drive to Prince Edward Island? You know?
So now for the real question. Have you ever accidentally slipped one of those to Jocelyn? Just like, go on to sleep.
No. She is, her system is so delicate, she doesn't need it. She can take a half a muscle relaxer and she's out.
Nice.
It's so funny. So funny. I remember one time she took, it was a natural supplement. I can't remember what it was for. She was having some trouble sleeping because of work stress. And it was just like, the natural stuff that's found in Turkey. And it's just basically in like an herbal.
Tryptophan?
Yeah, I think so. Natural.
Probably melatonin.
That's what it is, melatonin.
Okay.
I mean, again, she took like one or half of one. I almost feel like she fell asleep mid-sentence. Like, she just she's got no tolerance for the sleepy medications. She's just completely gone.
That's not even active.
No, exactly, right? So, yeah. So I don't know.
What always throws me off when flying is at the very end when they clap.
Like, why are you clapping?
Well, I always have that slight moment where I'm like, did I miss something?
Yeah.
Is there a reason we're clapping? Should I be really happy?
Is there a gremlin on the wing? What's happening?
Weird.
Is there something on the wing?
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever experienced that. I remember one trip to Montreal in particular, the pilot came on the plane loudspeaker to say, like, well, welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. You picked an interesting day to fly. And it was something like 70-kilometer winds here in Halifax, and this guy was taking off. And it was just ridiculous. I've never been on anything like that in my life, and I never want to again. Just like, hey, let's find, you know, near hurricane force winds, and I'll get in a little metal tube and fly away. No! No! Let's
that happened
not.
To me when I was flying out of St. John's once.
Yeah, that's a fun spot to go.
Oh, man.
If it's not delayed, which it usually is.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can probably move on to the main event here, since sure. We've warmed ourselves up. And this is where I could tell everybody and remind everybody that this is going to be a spoiler section. In case you're new to the Citadel Cafe... now that Game of Thrones is back, we do a Winter is Coming segment, and this is season 4 of this particular segment, and we basically tackle episode by episode, week by week, and we do not hold back. So if you're tuning in and you have not seen Game of Thrones that was that aired on Sunday on HBO, then just, you know, watch it and come back later, because it's just we're not going to tiptoe. It's just going to slam you right in the face. It's going to be visceral, just like the show. So this week, it is episode 1, Two Swords. There is going to be a wiki link in the show notes for all kinds of great names and places and stuff so you guys don't get lost. Tyrion welcomes a guest to King's Landing. At Castle Black, Jon Snow finds himself unwelcome. Dany is pointed to Meereen and the mother of all slave cities, and Arya runs into an old friend. I like the way that the descriptions are a little bit vague this time around. Usually the Wikipedia articles almost spoil the whole show in the first little bit, but...
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've been talking for a while here. So, I mean, Peyton, I know that you and Lee are experiencing Game of Thrones for the first time through the show. How did you watch it with Lee this time around, or was it just you?
I know. I just caught it there when I was doing work today, and I couldn't get any work done because the system was crashing.
Oh,
so
right.
I found it and watched it, and it was great. Arya finding her old lost friend was the highlight for me.
Yeah, I feel like that kind of hit a note with a lot of people. What about you, Mike?
Yeah. For me, it was just as far as like season premieres go, it was definitely I think it was the strongest one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first one where it wasn't just, we're going to catch up with them, we're going to catch up with them, we're going to catch up with them, we're going to meet this guy and this guy. And it was more of, this is what happened last season, and this is how everyone's still really messed up about it.
Yeah, hold on to your shorts. Yep. Here we go, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can sort of appreciate the long crescendo of season 3 because of how they ended it. Because of the Red Wedding and because of how visceral all that was and how that really kind of like stabs you in the gut, pardon the pun.
Yeah.
You know, like it made for a frustrating season premiere, and even like the first 3 episodes, it's still good, but it was really slow.
Oh yeah, the first 3 or 4 in that season.
Yeah, it's really a lot of posturing and stuff like that. And I feel like they really kind of set the tone right out the gate with this one. Arya's scene obviously stole the thunder for me as well, but I also really enjoy Tywin, and opening the show with Tywin melting down Stark's greatsword ice and turning it into 2 smaller swords. He just has this regal, decisive, vicious quality to him all the time. And it just, I listened to A-Move Radio today with Garrett Wanzerl, and actually Jocelyn was on there with Kyle and Ben as well. And Garrett described him as like a Disney villain. Like all he needs is a talking parrot on his shoulder. Like he's just classic, you know, like, it's a little bit of a cartoon, I guess, you know, comparison, but like he's one of those villains that you hate him, but you love him at the same time. You know,
because he's so smart.
Well, yes.
You know, everything he's doing, he knows exactly why. And he's about 15 steps ahead.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. And, you know, like it really kind of feels like this season is like, starting off, I mean, I realize it's only the first episode, but it feels like the Empire Strikes Back. You know, like it's just the bad guys are winning.
Yeah, that's gonna
get you know, the good guys are losing. I mean, like the only kind of person you can root for as far as, you know, having a shot is Daenerys. Like, I mean, everybody else is really under the gun.
And Arya.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like Arya right now, I mean, like as good as she's doing, I mean, there seems to be a little bit of a mutual respect there between the Hound and her, but I mean, he's really just going to sell her to the highest bidder. Like it just,
oh yeah,
she's not out of peril. Like it just, it's
yeah,
yeah, it's an interesting situation. So I mean, I really enjoyed the opening scene, and I was a little bit sad when they melted down ice. Like, I mean, you know, I've gotten used to the idea, of course, of the Stark hardship, but like, there's just, you know, part of me is just like, oh God, I wish that would have stuck around longer. And when I first read that passage in the book about the sword being transformed, I thought I had a handle on what the Song of Ice and Fire, which is the whole book series, you know, title, was going to be. Yeah. And I don't know now. Like, I mean, I thought it was going to be about swords, and there's some foreshadowing, and I'm feeling now like there's other things that I'm thinking of, but I mean,
thinking of like ice being the wall and fire from the dragons or.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking too. Yeah. Like, and that's what I was thinking too. So I'm wondering if there's going to be some back and forth victories, like, you know, ice being melted down. I wonder if there's going to be some fire victories happening. And then I'm wondering if maybe, you know, later this season or next season, if there's going to be some more ice victories, maybe not necessarily the people we want to win, but like, there's still this whole situation with some, you know, ice zombies coming down from beyond the wall. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's happening. And I agree with you, Mike. I'm glad that they didn't do the whole catching up with everybody. They really kind of propelled things forward,
which was really great. I didn't notice, did they name the swords in the episode?
They didn't.
Okay.
They didn't, and they only, as far as the television show goes, they only revealed who one of them is for.
Yeah.
So Tywin gave Jaime the larger of the sword, because the great sword from Stark was so big that he was able to make two Valyrian steel blades. And so he gave one to Jaime, ironically, because he only has one hand and it's not his sword hand anymore. And that kind of sparked a whole kind of storyline with, you know, Jaime returning to King's Landing, being told by Tywin he wants Jaime to go back to Casterly Rock and rule, because Tywin has to remain in King's Landing. And Jaime saying, no, I'm not doing that. I'm part of the King's Guard. Like, I swore a vow, and this is where I'm going to stay. And you really start to see this interesting character develop in Jaime, where, like, I mean, in the first season, you hate him. He pushed a 6-year-old out a window.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, but all of a sudden, like, he loses his hand. Like, he's still a villain, but he's very likable. Like, I mean, he's almost having a change of heart.
He's more of a rogue than a villain now, I think.
Good call.
Exactly.
That's well put. Yeah, I agree.
When I saw his hand get sliced off, I was kind of like, and then his heart grew 3 sizes.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
it was a Grinch moment for me, for sure. him and with Brienne and like walking around and all that. That was probably one of my favorite parts of the third season.
You need to strap one antler to Brienne's head and
that's all you need to do.
Have her pull him around.
There's so many mashups there, right?
Oh, geez.
She can totally pull a sleigh. Come on.
Yes. Yeah, she is a tall, tall woman. Having seen some of the scenes that she had with some of the other characters, including Marjorie, I mean. Marjorie, I know that actor is a small woman. They must have had her stand on something. Like, I mean, she was only a head taller than Marjorie, and there's no way.
Like, when she was telling him about Renly and all, I was like, even if she is mad, what are you going to do? She's not going to be able to do anything.
And the grandmother's response to her was beautiful, right? It's like, you're magnificent.
Yeah, she's like, you are large.
Large and in charge. I'm struggling right now to remember the grandmother's name, because she is one of our favorite characters here at home.
Elena.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not Martell. What's her last name?
Yeah.
Is it Martell?
No. That's Dorne.
Wow.
Oh God.
I'm missing
Tyrell.
Tyrell. Thank you. Okay, I was close. Martell Tyrell.
You're almost there.
Yeah, I was getting there.
Tomato.
They call her the Queen of Thorns. Is that it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's the High Garden is the place where
The
Rose is where she's from. That's her sigil. But I mean, it's mentioning Dorne. I mean, like, I think one of the best exchanges in the show was, as always, between Tyrion and somebody else. Dorne Martell. What's that?
It's Prince Oberyn, I think.
Is it Prince Oberyn? I thought it was Dorne Martell.
Dorne was the guy that was supposed to show up.
Oh.
And then Oberyn the Red Viper showed up instead.
Okay.
And I think that's what it was.
Yes, you're right. You're right. You're right.
I don't know what it was like in the book, but, you know, they really help establish that guy from the the first little bit. Like, yeah, this guy, he's very, very...
Impulsive.
Yeah. Yeah, he just seems to be something almost like elemental about the way he looks and moves. It's like, okay, this is a fellow who's compact and sort of feminine looking, but there's still something very agile and masculine about him. And I think he'll be a guy worth seeing how the story develops. So anyway.
Oh yeah, he's really cool. I really, 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 really like the way they introduced him, and you kind of immediately, you're right, you just got the sense you're like, yep, if he wants something, he's gonna do it, and he's gonna get it done.
Yeah, it's like Joffrey, but with a brain. You know, like he's got that kind of he's got
less whiny.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean he hates Lannisters. I mean, after and the whole reason, I mean, they explain it really quickly in the show, but basically, his sister was the princess, and she died when Tywin and his forces invaded King's Landing the first time, that put Baratheon on the throne.
Yeah.
And so he blames the Lannisters for his sister's death, specifically Gregor Clegane, the Mountain, the Hound's brother.
Yeah, I think he thinks that he killed her, right?
Yeah, well, the rumor is that he raped her and split her in half with a sword.
Yeah.
That's a bad way to go.
Yeah, and the metaphor and the innuendo is just kind of like smack you in the face. Yeah. You're like, when they say that, you're just kind of like, oh God, like I just, oh. Like, and it's the things that this show has done in the past that are so graphic, and then they just say stuff like this now, and your brain immediately just kind of goes, oh no, like I don't need to imagine what this was like for this poor princess. He's making no efforts at all to hide why he's there.
Oh yeah.
And what he intends to do at any given opportunity. I mean, like the poor people that were the poor Lannisters that were in the brothel there. Yeah. Like just stabbed.
They were goading him.
Well, yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like I shouldn't say poor, but like to the outside of having the last name Lannister, previous to just like speaking to them, there was no kind of interaction. He had no real personal grudge. So it extends that far. Like if you've got a line on your chest, you're a target. And I agree with you, Mike, that he's aggressive. Like he's just, you know, it's one of those things that I think is going to pan out really, really well.
I did get the feeling that he had a littlest bit of respect for Tyrion. A little bit. Cause he didn't seem to be as, aggressive towards him.
Yeah, but both being the second sons and all that fun stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah, good point. Yeah, I think that was the next thing I was going to say, was that the second son thing seems to be a tie that binds them. And you can kind of see you kind of wonder, what would Tyrion be like if he had the prince's stature?
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, Tyrion has to rely on his brain because he's being a dwarf. He can't, you know, physically throw his weight around and hide behind his royal heritage. Whereas, is it Oberyn? What was his name? Oberyn, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Oberyn obviously is capable of physically harming people on his own. And like, he doesn't have to send minions or recruit protection. He's pretty capable himself. So it's going to be an interesting days in the brothels of King's Landing, it looks like.
But Bronn was great though with the Bronn, Tyrion's buddy.
Okay, I'm back.
Oh, did we lose you?
Apparently.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Sorry, I didn't even see that there.
That's okay.
Good old Skype. Good old Skype.
So was it Tyrion's bodyguard? Was it Bronn? Bram?
Bronn.
Bronn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think him and the prince, they sort of, you know, had a little bit of a mutual nod to each other, right? It's like, you know, anyway, did you kill to get the job? Well, initially, right?
Yeah. Like, Bronn is one of the coolest
guys. He's I killed the right people. That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's come up quite a few times in the show before that we're definitely fans of Bronn.
Fans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So getting up into the north, it wasn't quite as exciting. I was hoping for a lot less Ygritte this season because I just don't enjoy her. But there's you know, some posturing and stuff above the wall. But for me, the more interesting story was happening with Jon at the wall. And, you know, Alistair Thorne is now kind of the head of the Night's Watch. Well, not kind of. He is the head of the Night's Watch now that the old bear is dead. And I just want to throw this guy out a window. Like, there's nothing that he says that I just don't want to just smack him with something. I'd be just like, get out. Just, you know, all of them are just so blind to what's really going on and so intent on just like this kid who thinks he's knows what he's doing, and he does, and it just makes them all look like lazy assholes.
The guy, like, oh, giants, yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it just, I feel like I, at least, you know, John has got Maester Aemon on his side.
Yeah.
And I loved the exchanges between these, how the oldest man in the room and the youngest man in the room were the people that were having the most composure. Whereas these kind of like middle-aged children were the ones snipping and snarking behind their all-powerful table, you know, judging John for what he's done. And John's like, yeah, you know what? I slept with the enemy. Do you know how much intelligence I get from the enemy because I slept with her? Really? You're gonna bash me over the head for that? Like, just because you haven't had any in 10 years doesn't mean that you get to take it out on me. Like, ugh. It was one of those things that, like, I'm glad that they didn't just, like, lock him up and, like, we didn't have to deal with him being in chains or anything like that. Like, it's so frustrating to see that kind of stuff.
That didn't happen.
No. So do you guys, how do you guys feel about the North of the Wall? Like, what do you think is coming this season?
Giants. Big scary guys all look like frozen zombies and
some cannibals.
Yeah, some cannibals.
Possibly apparently. Cannibals. Yeah, with roasting arms and a spit.
Yeah. Because apparently crow is delicious.
Apparently, we'll have to try it sometime.
I think the last couple of seasons John's been a bit of a whiner, and I think this what's coming now. He's like, all right, he knows what's out there. He knows who his enemy is. He's seen Mance Rayder's face, and you know.
Yep.
You know, it's all being laid out, and
it's matured him too.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's no longer the young fellow looking to, you know, make daddy proud. He's like, okay, I'm actually a member of the Night's Watch, so I gotta step up here and take care of the rest of it because no one else is gonna do it because the rest of the guys there are all dolts. So
I guess I'll look around and be like, I've seen things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like something I'm really interested to see how they handle in the show, and it's not. You know, giving anything away. It's just kind of from what I've seen on TV already, especially learning of his brother's death and his mother's death at the hands of people who should have been allies at, you know, under the, you know, bribery or instruction of people who are indeed their enemies.
Yeah.
And now he's going to protect a lot of them from the stuff that's coming from above the wall.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I really hope that what is most likely an inner torment, you know, for John, they're somehow able to bring out and communicate to everybody in the show because of the fact, like, that's got to be just like, oh, God. Like, you know, it's the same with this Alistair Thorne line. You know, like, I've got to tell you stuff so you survive. Like, I really just want to just, like, tell everybody else and leave you in the dark.
Yeah.
You know, and I imagine, like, I mean, like, to know that, you know, Tywin Lannister is responsible for, like, the death of your father, or Joffrey is responsible for the death of your father, Tywin Lannister is responsible for the death of your mother and your brother. Like, God, just, you know, to say, like, oh, well, I've got to protect you now, doing my duty, like, it's a rough go.
Absolutely. I'm not really sure what else to say about it, because I'm having one of those moments you talked about before. I don't want to.
I understand. I know what you mean too. I know last season one of the lower points for me was the death of the old bear. You know, like, I really enjoyed him as an actor and of course him as a character, and it takes that. It's just one more ally that John had that's no longer there.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's got Sam and a couple of his younger, you know, like, kind of brothers in the Night's Watch, but he, like, anybody that has any real authority, and not that Maester Aemon has a lot. Like, there's really no one. So he's kind of, it's this uphill battle of, like, you know, the sky is falling and no one's listening, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I like Sam's response because John was there, you know, moaning all about, you know, how his older brother was better at everything than him. And Sam's like, shut your face. You know, you're better than me at everything. I hate you. Right?
Yeah. I like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you know, Sam's really coming to his own as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially did he kill?
He killed the White Walker.
He killed the White Walker last year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, and that kind of stuff. Yeah, that kind of stuff is moving him forward as well. I like the jape too at John's. Like, well, you're better at everything except for reading.
Yeah.
You know, we Jocelyn and I got a good chuckle out of that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can journey across the narrow sea because I saw this stuff in the previews and I don't think they I don't think they used everything from the first episode as far as dragons were concerned for the promos. But man, oh man, these dragons are looking fantastic.
Yeah,
big dragons.
Yeah, they're big. They're what? Say bigger than a horse? A little bigger than a horse. Maybe not quite as heavy, but they're certainly...
Yeah, they usually carry a full-grown sheep.
Yeah, yeah, they're getting up there. And, I mean, obviously, Drogon is front and center, biggest, meanest. And I'm surprised that he snapped at Daenerys. It was an interesting kind of...
It's a bit of foreshadowing, I think.
Yeah, yeah, like, I'm surprised that they put that in there. Because, like... Go ahead, Ben.
No, I just think that she's probably coming quite used to and complacent in her role as the mother of dragons and the mother and the freer of all these slaves. And, you know, she's just been, you know, victory after victory after victory, right? So, you know, and she's so protective of these dragons. But as, you know, the fellow says to her, you know, you can't tame them, right?
Yeah.
Even their mother. So, you know.
Yeah, anyway. It's kind of like the Avengers and the Hulk, you know, like in the comics anyway, like you've got to aim him. Yeah. You can't really... control him, or you know, you've got to get out of the way.
Just aim him. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, like, I hope as the series progresses, they like in the Lord of the Rings, you know, Gandalf has access to those eagles. Just throw Frodo on the thing with the ring, fly to Mount Doom, drop it in, and be done with it, right? like I hope, you know, if the opportunity comes up and they've got these three dragons and they can actually just go ahead and melt them and then come on back, right? Just, you know, have a safe flight, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's certainly going to change the way that she approaches new cities, because, I mean, previously they had some, you know, attacks where dragons were burning, like, key individuals, causing some mayhem. But now, I mean, especially with Drogon being so big, like, I feel like there is some serious damage that could be done. Like, I mean, these things are going to be able to take out siege engines. They're going to be able to, you know, deal with a lot of stuff. I don't know how vulnerable they are. They haven't said anything yet in the show about whether, like, you know, how big do they have to get before an arrow can't really pierce the scales, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, or how much longer before she can pull, like, an Aegon the Conqueror and, like, just take over an entire city by flying over it or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I don't know how big they get. I mean, like, they allude in the books early on, which isn't a spoiler. And I think they talked about it in the second season, maybe, when Arya was at the capital.
Yeah, but they also showed... I think
they showed the skulls.
Oh, did they show the skulls?
Yeah, and the skull and like the skull from just laying down was, like, taller than a man. You could walk into the skull, sort of thing.
Yeah,
I think that was... I can't remember his name, but it was, like, one of the first ones.
Yeah, they obviously Martin goes into the details about the names of the dragons and the histories and stuff like that. But it just I think a lot of it had to do with them being free, like it just because raising them in captivity.
Yeah,
I feel like they never grew as big as they wanted them to, but only the biggest, you know, the biggest were the ones that were wild. And for some reason, the Targaryens were able to
tame them enough to ride them.
Yeah, or at least earn some sort of mutual respect or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how all that works yet, which is cool. Like, I'm glad that it's one of these wonderful things that, you know, in the first Star Wars films, you know, the Force was very mysterious. And that's what I like about this dragon stuff, is it's like you're dealing with a world that's very based in reality for the most part. There's some magic here and there, but it's pretty dark, pretty voodoo-esque. And then there's dragons. But dragons really are the only... kind of, well, sorry, the White Walkers, but there's
like, the Red Woman too.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, yeah, but she's, so there's magic and it's like sorcery and stuff like that, but it's not, you know, light beams from a staff. It's not, goblins and orcs and trolls and, you know, Vonskers and talking spiders. Like, there's just not this kind of epic expanse of these magical creatures. They're all pretty focused. I mean, I think the most...
We get Shadow Baby Assassins. Don't forget those.
Shadow Baby Assassins. Where am I?
That'd be the best name for a band.
Nice. Shadow Baby Assassins. Which ones were those again?
Remember when the Red Woman birthed the Shadow and then it killed Henley?
Okay.
Stannis, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay.
The I just had a thought about when we talk about the dragon snapping at Daenerys. You know, we know that the fire can't hurt her, right?
Right.
You know, the dragons don't. The dragons have never seen that before. So if they establish dragons sort of taking a little snap at her here, maybe being a little, you know, disobedient and that sort of thing, eventually if they turn on her and they try to burn her, and then she's unscathed, at that point, she'll totally like probably submit to her as being an alpha, and then she can fly them and all that stuff, drive like ride them.
That makes sense.
Right? Anyway, I don't know if that would be, you know, just a guy and haven't read the books. It would sort of make sense. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. I'm really interested to see more of Viserion and Rhaegal too. They kind of glazed over it. We got a couple of quick glances, but I feel like there's some opportunities from what I know in the books about what the dragons look like, you know, because one's kind of like white and gold, the other one's kind of green. And I hope that they're not just like clones of Drogon, but smaller.
Yeah, we didn't really get a really close look at them.
So. No, we saw them flying around and stuff like that and landing a little bit, but they jumped back so quick when Drogon, you know, kind of established his authority that you just really didn't see. Now, I mean, on the flip side, you get to see a lot of detail on Drogon, like with,
yeah.
He looks like a kind of a cross between a snake, what a lot of us kind of consider a dragon, and then a velociraptor. Like, it was something about the sideways way he moved his head. Like, because, I mean, they don't have binocular vision. They've got eyes like birds,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they got to turn their head to look right at you. And something about the way that he kind of like chortled his tongue and then when he got angry, like all the scales in the back of his neck kind of all like yeah. pointed up and they were all kind of like translucent and red despite the fact that he's black. And it was really, really cool.
It was super cool, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm happy this is happening at a time where I get lost in the show and I'm not sitting there looking at with my animator's eye trying to figure out how they made him or like, you know, whether or not it fits into the shot. Like, I mean, I through research for tonight's episode, I saw this top 10 list of like the best dragons in movies and entertainment. And, you know, these dragons were on the list, but the other dragons on the list were just like as epic as they were at the time. They looked so fake. When you see them now, but
what were the other ones?
Oh, like Dragon Slayer from the '80s. The one with Sean Connery, Dragonheart. Obviously Smaug, but I mean he looked really good. There was all these different dragons. I mean, and some of them were cartoons, so like it really wasn't meant to be, you know, all realistic ones. It was just like the best story dragons, you know, of the sci-fi entertainment, but. I really wasn't thinking about it. Like, it looked seamless. I mean, part of it is probably having seen these things grow up and, like, being introduced to them slowly, as opposed to having a great big wow factor. It was just kind of like, oh, wow, like, these, like, it's not like a, this is the first time you've ever seen them. It's like, oh, this is where they're taking it. Like, you kind of, like, watching this, it's almost like a character growing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool. Let's see what else is going on with Daenerys. This is a big point that a lot of people are talking about. Dario Naharis has been recast.
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a smarmy looking bugger the last season. I didn't like him at all. He was full of himself and it didn't mesh with Daenerys as she is in the show. Like if this was supposed to be a romantic encounter, then you're just kind of like, nope. I can't see her falling for this douchebag. Like,
well, they also changed how she reacted to him a little bit too.
Yes,
She wasn't like giggling like a little schoolgirl anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's you know, it's like, aren't you special? You've thought to bring me flowers, and he's like, no, I'm talking to you about the land and the important things that these flowers can do for you, like, you know, medicine and poison and, well, okay, this one's just pretty because I think you're hot, but like, just, it was great, yeah, like, really well paced, and I like smart banter like that, you know, in characters and in shows like this. It's nice not to see the WB in Game of Thrones, you know, where it's just like smacking in the face, like, well, I guess they're going to get together. Like, just, it's a little bit smarter than that, which I enjoy. Yeah. And he's a better looking actor too. If that doesn't sound weird for me to say.
Game of Thrones does have those moments though, but usually it's like, oh, he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, usually. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I heard someone say, earlier today, I think it was probably on A-Move TV that, They figure out, you know, first they make you like a character, and then they kill them. And then you have to pick one of your least favorites to like, and then they kill them. Like, and then that's just how the show is going to go. So be prepared, right? Yeah. I'm trying to think that there was some stuff with Jorah Mormont, and I really enjoy him, but he really didn't have much to say outside of just kind of warning her about the dragons. And, I guess the slave markers on the way to Meereen. Was a pretty grim moment. I didn't catch on right away that it was a kid on the cross.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw a girl, but I didn't really clue in as to the age, probably just because of like the rigor and the fact that she was dead and, yeah. and whatever. But like I didn't clue in that it was someone so young. I was like, oh man, I like how they give the validity to Daenerys' march on these cities in where is she? Valantis? No. I can't remember where she is.
She wasn't Astapor, and she was going to Meereen.
Meereen, right. So is Meereen a city, or is Meereen like a state, like an just area?
City.
It's a city.
With like walls and all that.
Right. Yep. So by doing this, like she's, you know, freeing slaves, she's, you know, burying, giving these slaves that have been, you know, crucified and put as mile markers to Meereen, you know, proper burials. And like, I can see not only the statement she's making, you know, politically and morally, but also like the heart, like she's marching a slave army behind her. I mean, like, to see the respect and the proper treatment of even dead slaves, I'd imagine she's just going to win, you know, more real respect as opposed to just simple, we've been purchased, we are obedient, you know, as far as the, is it, what are they called?
The Unsullied?
Unsullied, that's what it is. Mm. I was thinking of the other word that she uses, Dovahkiin. I can't remember how she pronounces it, but that was the word that stuck in my mind. But yeah, the Unsullied, like, I mean, they're going to be, I can see a lot more of a loyal kind of following.
You get the feeling that they're following her because they want to, not because they feel they have to.
Yeah. Well, wasn't there a speech last season about her, like, freeing them and then saying, you're free, and then you can follow me if you want?
Yep. Yeah. And then every one of them stayed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, that brings us to the end of the show with Arya and the Hound.
A highlight.
Yes. I shouldn't say not the grim end. It was the grim end for somebody, but it was
some people. That's the icing on the cake.
Yeah. I mean, like, and I have to say, like, I really enjoy the humor that they're keeping up with the show. And Arya and the Hound are like the oddest mismatched kind of pair that you would ever see. But like, it starts with her complaining about him smelling on the horse and like, when can I get my own ride? And then, I mean, I literally laughed out loud when Arya spotted Needle, knew that the guy was the guy that killed her friend Lami. And like, without a beat, the Hound just goes, what the fuck's a Lami?
It was so good.
Like, just,
I just died immediately.
Yeah, I mean, Glaqueen's delivery is just so spot on, and he just does not give a crap about any nonsense whatsoever, right?
And when he's sitting at the table and they're talking about chickens.
Yeah, you bring me that chicken. You got any money? He's like, no. So you're going to die over a chicken? Well, someone is.
Yeah. He's like, you know what? You better give me that chicken or I might have all the chickens in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, then he wants two chickens, and I mean, things obviously escalate quickly. And despite the fact that he's, he's shown before that he doesn't really have a side. Like he's saved Sansa before. I mean, he's obviously rescued Arya, sort of. I mean, even though he's selling her to the, you know, to her aunt, but or that's his plan.
Even still, though, it seems like it's his way of being like, I'm going to take you to your aunt, but I'm still going to get some money.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's. Sorry, go ahead, Peyton.
If she has enough money left over, then she can buy you a pony.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, she's not getting you for cheap.
So. Yeah, I mean, self-preservation, but self-preservation with a code, which I think he even mentions in the sequence about having a code.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to be a very strict code. I mean, he's quite all right with chopping someone down the middle.
That's his thing. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and things obviously get violent because the... is it Lannister men? I guess it's Lannister men that were there.
I think it was the mountains men, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So his brother's men. So even more reason to you know, skewer these guys.
He hates his brother.
Yeah. I mean, they're intent on ransacking the tavern for whatever it's worth, raping the tavern's owner's daughter. And Glaqueen is like, you know what? You don't like the way that your hair stands up at the back of your neck, so I'm just going to end you right now. Yeah. And the whole scuffle ends in Arya getting involved and holding her own and then finally getting her hands on Needle. And I mean, like, it was like a stand up cheer moment, you know, on the couch for Jocelyn and I, when we finally got to see Arya, you know, she gets Needle back. She takes this guy down at the knees to the point where he's on the ground. he's looking at her like, how the hell did this just happen? You know, and then he's just like, wow, whatever, you're just a child. You're not gonna, and like, she just starts talking. And it's not until the last sentence after she recites the exact words that he said to Lami before he stuck needle through the guy's throat, she does the exact same thing to him slowly. And I like this show again. It's just, it's, there are moments when they really kind of hammer home just how violent, you know, this kind of combat and stuff is. And they really, they don't hold back with this. I mean, like, the guy graphically chokes in his own blood. Arya enjoys every last gurgle.
Even before the gurgle, like when she comes up behind him and she grabs the weapon to hamstring him, you can see the slight smile on her face. She's like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, and then everybody is cheering for Arya because obviously, like, she's got some revenge on her hands. She's got, you know, all these things. She's lost friends. She's lost family.
Was this guy on her, like, go-to-bed kill list?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that this is the first time she scratches a name off the list.
I think, yeah, personally.
Personally. Like, she had, I can't remember his name.
The assassin guy.
Jaqen H'ghar.
Yes, Jaqen H'ghar. She had him wipe out one or two people.
Yeah.
But no, this is, the, like, on the list of people that she recites when she goes to bed, this is the first. Man, it's a quite a first step.
Does she still have the coin?
Yes.
As far as I know.
As far as we know, they never really...
Yeah, they don't really... I don't think she... If she does, then she's keeping it a secret. I mean, she wouldn't show it to Clegane, right?
But my buddy will show up again, I think, in a future episode, I hope, so...
You never know.
You never know.
Yeah, I just... Like a lot of good kind of arcs in this series, they leave a lot of stuff kind of open. You know, like, we don't know kind of what's... We don't know yet what's going on with Bran and Rickon. Like, we know...
No, not at all.
We know who they're with. Like, Hodor and... I can't remember the girl's name that they're with right now.
Asha,
yeah. But this is great having you on, Mike. It's like having a Game of Thrones encyclopedia. It's great. Someone currently reading book 5 is good to have on the show because all the names are fresh in their head. Like, I read book 5, like, 2 years ago. So, book 3 was, like, 4 years ago.
To be fair, I started it 2 years ago. I went through a point where I just read all of them in this really short time frame, and then when I got halfway through book 5, I was just like, I need a break. And I started reading other things, and then I finally decided to get back on it. I think it was you. You're like, read it, finish it.
Have you guys seen the, regarding like books and spoilers, have you guys saw the thing online what a teacher did in Belgium?
No.
No.
His entire classroom was acting up, and he very quietly said, who here likes Game of Thrones? And all the kids put their hands up. Who here read the book and no one put their hand up? He pulled the stack of all the books and he had them all earmarked. He said, if you guys don't shut up, I'm going to tell you the names of everybody who dies in the books and how they die. And they all fell right to line. Like, no more problems in class.
Oh, that's great.
That is brilliant.
Yeah. I was watching a documentary piece earlier today. It was an interview with Bill Amen, the guy that draws Foxtrot. Mm-hmm. And he draws Foxtrot with you know, sci-fi and fantasy kind of stuff, with the younger son in the comic strip, Jason, being very into all that kind of stuff. And they never covered it specifically, but it made me think, like, you'd want to, as an adult, because he's in his 40s, you know, put Game of Thrones into your comic strip, as people would talk about, you know, characters or themes or whatever. But the only one in that comic strip that's really into that kind of stuff is Jason, and he's too young.
Yeah,
you know, like, there'd be no way he would be allowed to read the books or watch the show, you know. So I would be so frustrated if I was dealing with at least with Starcross. Like, I Charlie's old enough and Sam is, you know, well, mature enough, using the quotes loosely, to enjoy that kind of, you know, content. So I can make jokes like that if I want. But I just it must be frustrating for a lot of, you know, family. Comic strip creators or any kind of media creators that are creating content kind of like for a PG audience to want to touch on Game of Thrones, but be tied, you know, down by, you know, the themes. Like, I mean, how old was the, what grade was the classroom, Peyton? Do you know from the story?
It was high school. So.
Oh, high school. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
That's bittersweet is what that is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, right on. I guess we can move into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by Tweaked Audio. The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. I enjoy mine. I use them for running, and if you're in the market for some new earbuds, they are fantastic. So once again, that code is TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. I feel like I've been just yammering on forever here. So, I mean, Mike, what's your pick this week?
For me, it's a bit of a music pick, but it has also just a really cool video with it.
Oh, cool.
So Jack White did from the White Stripes, he released a single from a new album that's coming out in June. It's just like it's an instrumental song. It's very cool if you like that type of music, which I really do. But anyway, the video is just, he put a speaker down flat and there's paint and various things bouncing like jello on the speaker. Along with the song, and it's really, really cool to watch.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like I've seen something similar before. I don't know if it was a music video, but I've seen that exercise.
Yeah, I think they did it on like Big Bang Theory, and you've probably seen it on like various different science videos or something. The song is called Highball Stepper, and it's a really cool song, and it's a really, really cool video.
Nice. I like Jack White.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Very, very cool. Peyton, what about you?
There's actually another video. Someone posted on Facebook there today, and second here now, and it was the guy who does Winnie the Pooh, Jim Cummings. He reads Star Wars as Darth Vader. It's a Winnie the Pooh doing Darth Vader, and it's really quite entertaining. A little bit of Darkwing Duck in there. I think Bane. They might do a little Bane in there as well, but like Winnie the Pooh is just sinister. It's really quite funny, and when I watched the first little bit of it, I was like watching the video, and I'm like, no, and I just scrolled down the screen, so I couldn't see the video, and listen, and they're like, oh, there he is, right? Like, because, you know, the guy's got gray hair and a mustache. And
like any particular parts, or just...
The part where he's captured Leia and the droids escape in the first one, right? So, yeah, there's nothing to stop us now, all this,
now,
right?
I can just picture it, and I can't wait to watch
so
it.
Oh, it's so funny. it'll make you more than chuckle. It's worth checking out for
That's
sure. Yeah.
Awesome. That's really cool.
Oh, man.
Yeah, very, very entertaining.
Well, my pick this week is something really, really cool happening on Kickstarter. It is the Micro 3D printer. And this is a 3D printer that's being touted as the 3D printer for consumers, not prosumers. Mm-hmm. So the closest competitor that has had this much press has been the MakerBot. Which comes in at about $1,200 with their latest model. Granted, it's high end, like it's meant to be high quality stuff. The Micro did their $50,000 Kickstarter goal in 11 minutes.
Yeah.
They are currently $100,000 away from $2 million with 27 days still left to go on the ticker. They've basically just kind of rocked the 3D printer industry by saying the world is begging for an affordable 3D printer that can be used for, you know, various, you know, kind of household uses and artistic uses. There's part of me that kind of says it's kind of too good to be true because, like, I don't know what technological advances need to happen to bring a 3D printer from $1,200 down to $300. Which is the cost of the Micro. I mean, that's before shipping and all that kind of stuff.
But even still.
Yeah, I hope that they're not such a small company that being now bombarded with, you know, $2 million in Kickstarter funding for purchases that they're not crushed and can't fulfill or they're too long in fulfilling orders and stuff like that and it loses steam. Like, I really hope... and they seem like a pretty, you know, like they seem like a very professional set of designers and business people. Like the video is very pro. I have high hopes for it. But there's a little part of my mind that just kind of says, like, this just seems too big to be true, like too good to be true. It's like someone telling you that here's a new Cintiq and it's $100.
Yeah.
Like I would be like, yeah, that's great. I don't anticipate that to work as well as the one that I have.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which is an unfortunate kind of like, training from society is like, you know, certain things have a certain value.
Yeah.
You know, and the other part of my mind, which is like slowly kind of learning ZBrush and trying to not fall too far behind in my industry as far as, you know, character design and art is concerned, makes me think, my God, you know, if you're designing a character, like how cool would it be to be able to sculpt it and print it off on your freelance desk, you know, for $300 plus the cost of whatever the filament is that you're using.
$12 a roll, I think it is here.
Yeah, I mean, like, just, it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, for me, like, I mean, obviously there's some practical uses, you know, like, they use the example of printing a new shower curtain clip, printing pieces of stuff for around your house or little vases for, you know, daffodils or whatever. But, like, artistically, like, if you could print your own prototype for action figures, like, I mean, it's a 7-inch cube. So, I mean, like, as long as no one piece is larger than 7 inches in any dimension, you're fine. Like, you can print off all kinds of great stuff and put it together. So, like, Jocelyn just got the Collector's Edition box set for Elder Scrolls Online, and it came with a statue that's probably, it's too big for this. It's about 12 inches tall.
Yeah, but it's huge.
Yeah, it's massive. But he comes in, like, a couple of pieces because of just like the fragility of the tail and all that kind of stuff. They kind of had to detach the tail and package it separately. And then when you get it, there's a peg and you stick the tail on the statue and, you know, that's how it goes together. So, I mean, like just seeing that one thing coming in like two or three pieces, you could put together and sell, you know, like something on your website. It's like, hey, you want to buy a model. Here's the model that comes in, like, you know, it stands 12 inches tall. There's three or four pieces you have to assemble. It's tongue and groove, you know, hole and peg construction. You just a little bit of super glue and you're off to the races, you know, and then you can paint it and sand it yourself or whatever. I can see a lot of, like, the entrepreneur in me just kind of goes, ding, when can I get one?
You know? And part of the challenge with this now is copyright, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The thing I'm not sure if I was talking to you about this, Joel, a while ago, but someone's saying, like, you know, you've got these desktop 3D laser scanners, and MakerBot make those, I believe, as well, but same size as a record player. You put your object down, it takes a full three-dimensional scan of the item. Then once you have it scanned in, you can scale it up or down or whatever. So if someone wants to take, you know, a set of G.I. Joes or Barbie dolls or whatever, and then once you got them in a computer, you can scale them down and you can go ahead and make yourself a set of earrings and sell them at the market, you know? So so what happens there with copyright and all that stuff? That all goes out the window, right?
Yeah.
Now, a couple weeks ago, I heard HB, apparently, HP, like, you know, the computer people.
Yep. Hewlett Packard. Yeah.
Yeah. They are saying that they are coming up with technology that's totally going to revolutionize the entire way 3D printing is done, and it's going to make it extremely accessible. So, you know, what they've done for the home printer, they're going to be doing for 3D printing as well. So this thing is probably just a little ahead of the curve of that with regards to accessibility, but quality-wise, it's probably something much better coming down the pipe, right? And then as a third point, you got things like the Oculus Rift, right? That was crowdfunded, made, like, you know, a couple $1 million with the initial prototype, which is now pretty much obsolete, I think, $300 prototype and, you know, all that fun stuff.
Well, the new prototype's coming out.
Yeah, the new one's coming out, and I've tried one when I was in BC there, and it's amazing. It looks great, right? But now that you know, Facebook has gone ahead and purchased, is it Facebook or Google?
Yeah, no, it's Facebook.
Facebook, you know, has now purchased it. There was an article online saying, you know, would you rather have $300 for the original prototype, or would you rather have $300 in shares that would now, each share would now be worth something like, you know, $45,000 or something like that, because everybody who contributed to that, if they had stock options versus an actual thing. So now there's a movement afoot of having a couple, and Kickstarter said they'll never do that sort of.
No, you know, it's not. Yeah, that's not what Kickstarter's for.
Yeah, but there's another couple of websites that are trying to develop that sort of model. So something like this, you know, that you would, that, you know, like this printer would come online, especially if it's a small startup company that has this sort of success, you know, you could buy into the actual stock. So anyway, so yeah, there's a couple of interesting things going on with, you know, this thing taking off, you know, $50,000 in 11 minutes is a pretty big deal, right?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly can chime in on the whole, like, Kickstarter versus, you know, investment backing and stuff like that. And I mean, I have to wrap this up quickly, so I'll try to be as succinct as I can, but I agree with and understand Kickstarter's position of not being, you know, the being like offering shares. Like, that's,
yeah,
they're trying to allow, I feel, individual creators or very small companies that do not want to go to large investment groups and have somebody or a group of people then have a financial say in how their small company is then run. Mm-hmm. I think the freedom of Kickstarter comes in where you get a lot of small donations. I mean, not that I feel that $300 is small, but you get a lot of small contributions as far as investment capital is concerned, usually for like distribution, manufacturing, like costs that are prohibitive to the little guy. And I don't really have that much of a problem with that little guy later on being purchased by a bigger company.
Yeah.
Because for me, if I was to back, say, if I back the Oculus Rift, yes, you're backing the little guy, but if you're backing the little guy to the tune of a couple million, as far as like when you look at something like this, you know that they're going to be doing quite well. You know that they're going to be doing a lot of R&D. You know that they're going to be able to move their company forward, and it's going to get a lot of attention, and it's going to become very appealing to larger companies. But mm-hmm. then if the larger company, like say Google, buys Micro, just as an example, I don't then feel bad, because then I've helped these creative individuals who just didn't have, the capital get to a point where their company has then been purchased by mm-hmm. another company that has the money to then help further the research. Now, that's provided that the company doesn't strip it. There's some things that just get bought for patents or get bought for technology, and then that's it.
Yeah.
But that, again, that comes down to what you choose to individually back as a Kickstarter backer. I think that there's probably a place for both kinds of crowdfunding sites. Like there's a place for Kickstarter, there's a place for Patreon, and then there's a place for like a small investment kind of thing. Yeah. I think the problem there in the investment thing is like, I don't even want to know the legal hoops that you have to jump through to get something that going. I mean, and if you do get it going, it's not going to be international. Like it'll probably have to be like local to the US or local to whatever country starts it. Maybe it's the UK that gets one first. I don't know. But that's kind of my two cents. Well, that's it, folks. That wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile stream is provided by alphageekradio.com. Music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod, and you can, of course, find the episode on thecitadelcafe.com and iTunes post haste. Email the show at thecitadelcafe.com if you'd like to throw in your two cents on Game of Thrones. We'll be watching episode 2 for next week. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. And that's about it. You can find me at joelduggan.com. Please also check out my Patreon page at patreon.com/joelduggan. I'm adopting the value for value model for my comic Starcross. So if you like the comic, please consider becoming a patron. You can follow me on Twitter at Joel Duggan and on Facebook as Joel Duggan Illustration. Peyton, where can people find you and 54 Hours?
Well, 54 Hours you can find on the National Filmware website, nfb.ca. I think it may be streaming perhaps only in Canada at the moment. I'm not quite sure about internationally. My website is cardboardtreehouse.com. And Cardboard Treehouse is also how you can find me on my Facebook page. And the rest of it, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr now. Woohoo! And that's all Peyton Francis, one word, P-A-T-O-N Francis. So. And you, Mike, how about you? Where can we find you, my friend?
Probably just on Twitter.
Awesome.
At Mike O'Dandy.
Cool.
That would be about it. And I think everyone should go and watch 54 Hours. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, cool.
It sounds really, really cool.
Let me know what you think.
I will.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. I can't say anything because I'm not sure if that's book 3 or book 5. Oh, gee, I forgot to mention on the show. Darn it. For those of you still tuning in, I am going to be on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club in about 15 minutes. That is on Galactic Netcast. You can find them on Twitter and find the link to the YouTube channel, because I think it's a video podcast. So I'm going to go make sure I don't look like a horse's ass.
Some makeup.
Yeah. Well, I just...
Get the blush. Just get it all on there.
You should totally do that... That Buffalo Bill from Shaun of the Lambs. play that horse's song in the background.
Definitive no.
Hey, Chan Serve is back. Nice.